This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, December 2nd, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead, a flight on a B-17 over northwest Arkansas, a conversation with Senator Mark Pryor, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5 at Walton Arts Center, and the return of our math segment with Chaim Goodman Strauss. Tickets for the 2012 Wakarusa Music and Camping Festival will be available on the web beginning Friday, December 2nd. This four-day festival is May 31st through June 3rd on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. A link to tickets and more information is available on the KUAF homepage at kuaf.com.
And we begin this edition of Ozarks at Large with Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor. Senator Pryor, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me again.
I want to begin our conversation this time discussing a proposed amendment that you had made. This in response to the sudden death of a U.S. Army National Guard Captain, Samson Luke, in Sebastian County.
Yeah, we had a 34-year-old captain in the Arkansas National Guard die back on January 10, 2010, so almost 2 years ago now. He had been to Iraq twice. He had been in the active duty. He was now in the National Guard, and he was doing his one weekend a month training that they do every month. And he lived 12 miles away from Fort Chaffee, so instead of having the Arkansas National Guard put him up in a hotel or something like that, he just stayed at home, you know, just trying to save the government a little money. Well, what happened was between the Saturday and Sunday training, you're under orders for 48 hours, and in that Saturday night, he was at home and he died in his sleep. Now, the doctors looked at it and they said it's clearly related to his training. He was in the line of duty. That's the term of art they use in the military. It was the strenuous work of the training. It was the length of the day. It was the weather conditions he was training in. So there's no doubt it's connected. Had he stayed in a hotel, he would have received a death gratuity. His family would have. But because he stayed at home, the military is saying he's not entitled to that death gratuity. Had he been driving to and from Fort Chaffee and died, had the heart attack or had the heart condition and died, he would have gotten the death gratuity, but not because he was staying at home. I feel like that's an injustice, and he has four children and a widow. We're trying to fix this on the Senate floor, and Senator McCain right now is opposing it, but we're working very hard to try to get a vote and get it passed this week.
Yes, this would say that's in vicinity, and this would be retroactive, so if passed, this would provide benefits for the family.
It sure would. We back this up to retroactivity for 2 years so that anyone else in this situation, it could have happened in North Carolina, it could have happened in Alaska. We don't know of any other cases. It's probably happened here and there, but we've not been able to find any other cases. But to me, he's on orders. He's on duty. I mean, had they called him in the middle of the night that night and said, get back over here to Fort Chaffee, we need you, he would have been there. I mean, he would have had to be there. He's on duty. So it just so happened that in trying to save the government, you know, $39 or whatever it was, so he didn't have to sleep at the local, you know, Super 8 motel or whatever it may have been, he stayed home. And it's really unfortunate. I think he's trying to be pencil whipped by the military on this. But, you know, we're trying to help him, and his family's been great. And I just feel like if there is a gray area and it deals with a serviceman or his family, you err on the side of the serviceman or his family, you know. And in this case, I think it would be considered a gray area, and we just need to help the family out here.
What little concern I've seen voiced, and it hasn't been much, about this amendment is the fact that it's retroactive. Any idea how many families would fall under that?
We cannot find any others. There probably are some. We don't have the ability to do an exhaustive search, but in running our traps, we've not found any others. It probably happens from time to time, but we can't find that it affects anyone else. It would change the policy going forward. So if it happened in the future, we would make sure that folks were covered. From my standpoint, what this really is about is the unequal treatment between the National Guard and the reserve component and the active duty folks. If he was on active duty, no question he's covered. But because we're utilizing the National Guard more and more today, you know, quite frankly, all the benefits and all the systems haven't caught up with that effort. And so Again, if he was active duty, he'd be covered. If he was driving to and from, he'd be covered. But he's not covered just on, to me, it's a pure technicality, sleeping at home instead of sleeping on the post.
Any conversations with Department of Defense officials about this?
Yes. The Arkansas National Guard, by the way, has been great. They have advocated for his family all the way up the chain. They got turned down at the Secretary of the Army level. That's we kind of got involved about that time. Then this is, you know, maybe a year ago. We kind of wrote a letter to the Secretary of Defense and asked them to look at it. He just bounced it straight back down to the Secretary of the Army. So we've hit a dead end in terms of trying to work that administratively. Now we're trying to do it legislatively. And, you know, quite frankly, we've had some the senators involved in the bill on the floor have had contact with the Department of Defense about this because they're kind of looking at this going, what are you guys doing denying this family? We don't understand this, you know. So it's created a very constructive conversation with the Department of Defense. So I'm hoping we get it fixed by the statute, but also I just want to get this family some relief.
When you were in Northwest Arkansas earlier this fall, you, and I think you did this as well in Central Arkansas, you had a plan for trying to get the economy back on track and Washington back on track. And at the time, you said that some of your proposals, the success or how fast they might be successful depended on what the super committee did. And now we know what the super committee did or didn't do.
Right. They fell apart.
Yeah. So how do you feel about your proposals?
Well, actually, you know, a lot of ours are already starting to work through the process. I think we have a total of 18 different bills that we're working in that. So we're not trying to pass it in one big bill. We're trying to piecemeal it through the Senate. We've already passed two of them, and we have others that are making their way through the system right now. The super committee, because it could not do what it was trying to do, I don't like that. I wish they'd been able to come up with some agreement, and I wish they would have taken the Simpson-Bowles debt commission recommendations and used that as the framework and patterned what they were doing after that. But anyway, they didn't, and that's ancient history at this point. But the super committee could have dramatically changed our spending and our taxing and our whole budget situation over the next few years. They didn't do that. So now we know that, you know, we're looking at probably sequestration, which is where the law now says that you just have to cut evenly between defense and domestic spending. So now that we know that, it does help on some of this to kind of clarify what the rules of the road will be over the next year or so.
Senator Mark Pryor, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is Ozarks at Large. There is a visitor at the Fayetteville Municipal Airport right now, a B-17. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas took a ride on the B-17, but what she found more interesting was some of the men that came with the aircraft.
December 1st, 1943. 68 years ago yesterday, World War II veteran David Randall's B-17 bomber plane was shot down over Germany. He joined other veterans yesterday to remember the date as aluminum overcast, one of only 15 B-17s still in operation, landed at Drake Field in Fayetteville.
We were on a bombing raid in by the Rhine River, just north of Cologne, when we got hit by a fighter and lost an engine and had to drop out of formation. Then we had to work our way back out. We got almost to the coast, 30 kilometers from the coast, until we found we had two engines shot out, and we only had two engines left, and that we were losing altitude, so finally we had to give it up and get up. Because they set both wings on fire, and when they do that, you don't have much left to fly.
When David, the plane's navigator, jumped from the plane, he was captured by Germans and held prisoner of war for a year and a half, until he was liberated on May 15, 1945. Moving outside, in anticipation of the B-17's arrival, David remembers his hunger while a POW, saying that had it not been for the Red Cross, he and the other prisoners would have died from starvation.
We didn't get Red Cross parcels all the time. We got them sporadically. And when we did, that was a heyday because
We had food to eat, but the Germans would come over and they'd open all the cans of food so that they would spoil if you didn't use them.
They opened them so that the POWs couldn't save them, to discourage attempts at escape. Though David says you don't try to escape on the Baltic Sea in the middle of December. Back inside the hangar, fellow vet Chuck Bigby, who survived 35 missions without being shot down, recalls the danger of his flights.
Scary. You hoped you made it back the next day. It was pretty rough, especially when I forgot what mission it was, but my cousin from Arizona, Robert Flake, was flying off my right wing. And he got hit in the number two fuel cell and started backing off and exploded. He didn't make it. Do you know that one of those bombs coming up there has got your name on it? And doesn't give you a very safe feeling. Yeah, it was quite a time in my life.
Chuck piloted a lead ship during the war, saying that it was like playing follow the leader in the air.
You would drop your bombs based on the lead ship. When they dropped their bombs, you dropped yours. So you only needed to bombardier in the lead ship. It was saved manpower. and I don't think it saved any lives, though.
Back outside, David and Chuck, along with their families and other veterans, gathered to watch as aluminum overcast circled the runway, made its descent, and came to a stop in front of the line of gazers. Anxious looks and smiles, like those of children, grew on the faces of the elderly men.
Isn't that a beauty?
And a beauty she is. Manufactured by Boeing between 1935 and 1945, the B-17 was nicknamed Flying Fortress because of its defensive power. During the war, they were among the most modern aircraft in U.S. inventory. With 10 crew members, the B-17 could go on 8-hour missions and carry 8,000 pounds of bombs. Though aluminum overcast never went into battle, it is complete with amenities for the 5 gunners. For veteran pilot Chuck Bigby, seeing aluminum overcast was like seeing a long-lost pal.
Well, I just like to see it. You know, it's like an old friend. And I know people that don't want to even see one. But to me, the B-17 probably was the most decorated and combat airplane during World War II.
For David, seeing a plane bearing the likeness of one that both saved his life and nearly killed him left him speechless.
It's just a unique experience. It's a surprise. I didn't expect to be here.
As time continues to move further away from the World War II era, fewer and fewer veterans survive. Aluminum Overcast tours the United States, creating emotional reunions for the vets who participated in B-17 missions. The stories and emotions evoked by such a sighting, 6 decades after the war, create a link to the purpose of such an aircraft. Not only do they get to see the amazing plane, the crew allows the vets the opportunity to take flight. As one civilian passenger commented on the scariness of takeoff, a vet turned to her and said, "Imagine flying on one for 8.5 hours. While being shot at. That is just unimaginable." For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Earth, sky.
It's very difficult to predict where science and technology are going, even over a short time span, for the obvious reason that the greatest advances are often the least expected, and science follows them.
You're listening to renowned Harvard biologist Edward O. Wilson, one of the world's best-known scientists and science communicators. He told Earth Sky he believes the 21st century will see profound advances in biology.
This is going to be a century of biology. Now we are entering an age of synthesis in which
So many discoveries have been made in biology, in the cell, at the molecular level, and on up to the development of organisms.
Dr. Wilson said he's hopeful that in this century, we'll see an end to hereditary diseases like cystic fibrosis.
I think we're on the edge, really, of mastering disease, particularly genetic disease. We will have genetic engineering in time that will allow the correcting of molecular structure to eliminate a genetic disease that does cripple such a large percentage of the human population today.
More at our website. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
It is Friday, the second day of December, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And with us in the studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She is the features editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And that funny little raspy sound you hear is me sharpening my elbows.
Oh, what are you getting ready to do?
Some of the best shopping opportunities in Northwest Arkansas happen this weekend. They benefit local artists. If you want to know where I'll be at one of these three places.
Okay.
The Little Craft Show. You've talked to them, haven't you, Antoinette?
I did. I talked to the two women that are organizing it a couple weeks ago, I think.
But have you seen pictures?
I haven't. They described a couple of things for me, which all sounded very cool.
Ooh.
Are they on their website?
Yes.
Okay.
They're calling it an indie craft show. It's basically the kinds of things that you would find on Etsy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's rings made out of vintage buttons and necklaces made out of vintage skeleton keys, and I want it. Their whole idea was that they would do this show for local artisans, but they did all the promotion virally.
Mm.
You know, they put up a Facebook page and they started tweeting. And
right.
So, except for what we've done here and what we've done in What's Up, it's all been viral.
All right. And when is it?
It is Saturday from 10 to 6 at Vintage Fellowship, which is 3416 North College Avenue in Fayetteville. Admission is free, and as always, what you spend is not my fault.
It's up to you.
The Block Street Holiday Art Sale is this weekend. It actually starts tonight from 7 to 9 at Mike Shirky's Good Folk House.
More local artisans.
Wonderful artisans. Don House, Marie Demarukas, Michelle Berg-Vogel, Susan Shore, Cindy Arcega. Gotta be there.
This is a tradition, and
this is 11 years.
Yeah, and it's part sale, part sort of social catching up, part Christmas holiday party, part everything.
It's sort of a weird like reunion.
Yeah. It's a good time.
7 to 9 today, 10 to 5 tomorrow, noon to 5 Sunday, 229 North Block Avenue. And also this weekend, the Community Creative Center, mm-hmm, at the Nadine Baum Studios, he's pointing, which you can't see, is having its fundraising sale.
Right.
All sorts of pottery. If you love pottery like I do, this is nirvana. 10 to 4 on Saturday, noon to 4 on Sunday, again in the Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville.
Now, are those some of the ceramics that we see when we go to Theater Square?
Yes. Those are the things we see and
that
lust after, that there's nobody there to sell them to me.
Okay.
Well, that day there'll be people there to sell them to you. They don't just have it out in the hall like we see.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over their studios, and there's a bunch of artists, and it's wonderful.
Okay.
And then there's theater, and mm-hmm, you know how I love that. I saw A Christmas Story for the first time this week.
How did you like it?
I liked it.
Yeah.
It was fun. It's the Rogers Little Theater version.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how much, because my sweetheart knows every line, as so many people do. And it's amazing how much they've managed to translate the movie into the play. It's a lot of fun. Of course, the story is that Ralphie wants a Red Ryder BB gun,
which makes it perfect for Rogers.
Because the Daisy Museum is, what, 30 feet away?
Exactly.
And they've even got it. The kid playing Ralphie looks like Ralphie.
Hmm.
It's a good time. 7 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Sunday, and again next weekend. Tickets are $7.50 to $15 at Rogers Little Theater. It is Christmas.
Almost.
If it is almost Christmas, it must be time for the best Christmas pageant ever.
ACO.
70 actors, adorable kids. The premise is that the worst kids in town come to the church for the Christmas pageant and get cast in it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's horrified, but then the kids figure out what Christmas is all about. It is this weekend only. Don't say I didn't warn you.
Okay.
7:30 today and tomorrow, 3 o'clock Sunday. Tickets are $10 to $20. 751-5441. And finally, there's a raft of holiday events. Way too long to list here. The Nutcracker is at Arend Art Center Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
John Two Hawks is in concert Saturday evening at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. There are Christmas parades, so you need to go check out what's up at nwaonline.com because they won't give me my whole own show.
And the Nutcracker, this is a combination of different companies and dancers from all over Northwest Arkansas.
Right.
Okay.
Put together by Infinity Performing Arts Studio.
Exactly.
That should be a good time. And of course, John Two Hawks has a new Christmas album.
Yes, he does.
So that should be fun too.
All right.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon Martin is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration says the state will see a slight increase in its revenues next year as lawmakers prepare work on the budget. Director Richard Weiss says the department expects net revenues to reach $4.7 billion for the fiscal year that begins July 1st.
The economy has not, at this point, taken hold in any kind of a recovery that's very strong. So this is a pretty modest growth pattern that we're looking at continuing for another year and a half from now.
Governor Mike Huckabee is expected to release his balanced budget proposal in mid-January. He has said he expects to recommend an increase in funding for public schools, but most other agencies' budgets will remain virtually flat.
The U.S. Postal Service is considering closing the Fayetteville Mail Processing Center and merging it with the one in Little Rock. USPS spokeswoman Lisa Tolliver Gay says the move could produce an annual savings of $6 million a year.
The Postal Service has lost several billion pieces of mail over the last year and has seen a decline for several years. And so what we're doing is looking at all of our operations to make sure that we are doing the best that we can with what we have.
If the merger takes place, Tolliver Gay says mail deliveries between Northwest Arkansas and the central parts of the state could be delayed by a day. A public hearing about the matter is scheduled for December 14th at the UARC Ballroom in Fayetteville. Another mail processing center, this one in Harrison, is also under consideration for closure.
The Arkansas Health Department marked World AIDS Day yesterday with a series of events and observances. Ed Barham, a spokesman with the department, says about 5,200 Arkansans are infected with HIV and minorities are disproportionately affected.
We continue to have an unacceptably high number of new HIV cases. We were going to have 275 new cases this year, and of those, it's a disproportionate number of African Americans. 46% of those will be African Americans, while only 16% of the total population is African American. So there's quite a disparity.
Barham says HIV infection in Arkansas is spreading most rapidly among minority men who have sex with other men. He says many people in the state who are infected don't know it.
The annual Fayetteville High School homeless vigil continues today, and school officials say more than $7,000 have been donated since the vigil began at 5 last night. That total is far off the pace of last year's record amount of $23,000 raised. Students remained outside in front of the high school all night last night and accepted donations from passersby. Donations are still being accepted at the school.
Arkansas Senator John Bozeman says Congress has a lengthy to-do list, including extending the payroll tax cut for workers that is expiring at the end of the year. He says Democrats and Republicans agree the extension is needed, but the parties disagree on the method.
Senator Reid would like to increase tax on millionaires. What we would like to do is put a hiring freeze on federal employees, not lay people off, but just freeze further employment for a few years so that we could get the federal workforce down a little bit.
The payroll tax would revert to 6.2%, up from the current temporary 4.2% tax, if Congress doesn't extend the cut by year's end. Senator Bozeman says he thinks paying for the cut by imposing a 3.25% surtax on income above $1 million would be harmful to job creation.
The University of Arkansas gymnastics team is ranked 11th in a preseason poll of NCAA gymnastic coaches. Arkansas has finished in the national top 15 the past seven seasons. This season will begin January 6th at the Cancun Classic in Mexico, competing against five other teams, including four nationally ranked squads.
And tomorrow's 7A State Football Championship game between Bentonville and Fayetteville will be available on cable television in Northwest Arkansas. Fayetteville High School students will produce and announce that broadcast. It can be seen on Channel 217 on Cox Cable, Channel 99 on AT&T UVerse. Kickoff between the Tigers and Bulldogs is scheduled for noon tomorrow in Little Rock. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy news studio, old friend Chaim Goodman-Strauss.
Hey,
welcome
Kyle.
Back.
It's great to be back. How are you?
I'm very good. Math professor at the University of Arkansas. For how many years did you and I visit almost every week?
Well, we started in 2004.
And I think the last time you and I were together on the air was March of 2010.
Right. So it's been a while.
Talked about math, had some puzzles. And we're going to do it again.
We are.
All right.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. We're also going to talk to some people about math and everyday life, things like that.
All sorts of stuff.
The podcast is coming back?
It is. We've had a lot of emails asking us, you know, where we were, encouraging us to come back. And so here we are.
And a couple of interesting, because when you would put the podcast up, you'd hear from people all over the world.
Oh, sure.
And you heard from some people in Australia? Is that right?
Australia, Sweden, Germany.
They were driving across Australia?
Oh, you're right.
And they listened to like every Math Factor podcast?
This guy wrote in and said that they drove across Australia listening to the Math Factor, which I'm not sure what to think about that.
I'm not either.
But that's pretty awesome.
It is. And then you received a cheesecake in the mail.
Right. Thank you, Harry Kaplan. That got us. That did the trick.
That's right.
I don't know what it'll take next time, but...
bribery to get it back. So here we are again after a nearly two-year hiatus, back with Math Conversations.
That's right.
Okay, so?
Well, I just have a little puzzle just to get us started.
Okay.
It's not actually I won't claim too much for it, but it affects me personally. And
okay.
There's probably lots of answers.
Oh, here we go. You have not missed a stride in 22 months.
Now I've moved offices, and I'm a lot closer to the tea room.
The tea room?
You know, where we have coffee and stuff.
Oh,
we
sure.
We have a coffee pot.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I started to notice that almost every single time I went in, the coffee pot was much less than half full, right? Now, so on average, it should be, I would presume, half full.
Right.
And so I'm sorry if my colleagues are listening, but I began to worry, you know, wonder about, you know, what their personal characters and stuff like that, leaving the last little drop in the coffee pot.
Right.
You know, why I ended up having to fill the coffee pot quite a bit, right?
Well, see, that's always the goal, right? Don't take the last because then you feel compelled to make the new pot.
Right.
Leave just enough.
Right. So, but even accounting for that, why on average should the coffee pot be almost empty?
So what you're saying is more often than – oh.
Yeah.
So what's the question here? Should it be or why is it?
Why is it? Assuming that I have worked with very nice people, and I do, that – on average, the coffee pot will be more empty than it is full. That's it.
So why?
We'll come back to that.
Okay.
Now, there's actually a pretty simple reason. There may be several simple reasons. And in fact, it may not even be the cleverest puzzle we've ever asked. But I think it really actually changed my life when I realized that there is a very straightforward reason.
And I guess you can't tell us how you figured it out because that might lead us to the answer. Okay. So next week? You'll enlighten
back.
Me. I'm going to think about this.
Okay.
And I'm going to start watching. Do you think it would be the same here?
I don't know. What kind of people do you work with? They all seem very nice.
My colleagues
seem very nice.
But I mean, this is not only your...
I think this is a universal coffee pot phenomenon.
Okay.
So please send in any questions, comments, answers to mathfactor@uark.edu. Or we're still on the web. mathfactor.uark.edu.
Is there a Math Factor Facebook page?
You know what?
Okay. Never mind. All right.
We'll
I don't want to give you more work. Okay.
No, we should do that.
Okay. Thanks, Chaim.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, the teasing.
The annual Block Street Holiday Art Sale will take place today through the 4th at the home of Mike Shirky's Good Folk Music Series at 229 North Block Street in Fayetteville. This 11th year celebration includes a variety of works from Northwest Arkansas visual artists. More information is available at 442-6541 or on Facebook under Block Street Art Sale.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville may soon acquire a 50% share in a 101-piece art collection donated 60 years ago by Georgia O'Keeffe to the historic African-American Fisk University in Nashville. An appellate court in Nashville affirmed this week that Fisk has the right to not only share the so-called Stiglitz collection with the museum, but that the college should have unrestricted use of the $30 million proceeds from the Crystal Bridges agreement. Fisk University began to explore the concept of selling the collection in 2004 to help the college's dwindling finances. But when Walmart heir and museum founder Alice Walton came forward offering a half-interest stake, representatives from Georgia O'Keeffe's estate claimed any sale would violate the terms of the gift, saying the artwork was donated on condition it could never be sold for profit. Last year, a chancery court in Tennessee ruled that Fisk could share the collection with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, but two-thirds of the proceeds from the sale would be restricted to the collection's upkeep. Fisk reportedly countered the $20 million endowment was excessive and unnecessary. This week's ruling, if settled, will help to sustain the financially strapped university, says a spokesperson with Fisk University, Crystal Gassimi.
Of course, our president and the rest of the university was very excited to hear the news that the appellate court had sided with Fisk University on this matter. Of course, like we've mentioned, that it's not over quite yet. The Attorney General has 60 days from November 29th to be able to file an appeal if he should please to do so. So we're just kind of waiting to see what the Attorney General will do. And of course, if he doesn't file, we will be back in Chancery Court to talk about the motions brought forward by Judge Dinkins,
including how the money will be apportioned, as well as the mechanics of transporting the art between Fisk and Crystal Bridges. And Gassimi wished to clarify that this is not an art sale.
We are sharing the art with Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville, Arkansas. So it's not something a lot of people, unfortunately, have thought that Fisk is selling the art, and that's not it. We are sharing a 50% interest in the art to where we would be sharing the collection with Crystal Bridges.
Select pieces from the Stiglitz collection currently hang in Fisk's Van Vechten Gallery on campus and are periodically rotated in and out.
There are paintings, including the Radiator Building from Georgia O'Keeffe. There are photographs from her husband, Alfred Stiglitz. And then there's also other paintings from the Stiglitz collection.
Gassimi could not cite an appraised value of the entire 101-piece collection. If the Attorney General appeals this week's appellate court ruling, the matter will then go before the Tennessee Supreme Court.
KUAF is supported by Collier Drug Stores, offering a prescription refill hotline and local delivery from one of Collier's 7 locations, now including Bentonville. Most insurance plans are accepted, and information can be found on the web at collierdrug.com.
Monday night, the University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra concert with Master Chorale and Schola Cantorum will present a concert titled Winter's Glory. Poulenc's Gloria is part of the program. More about that piece in just a few minutes. Also on the program, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5. Dr. Robert Mueller, the director of the University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra, says the Tchaikovsky work is a favorite of patrons and musicians alike.
It's fantastic. We just love playing it. It's filled with lots of raw emotion, but also some tender moments, sometimes visceral and sometimes sublime. It's just fantastic to play.
Is it your choice to put the program together?
It was my choice to do the Tchaikovsky, and Professor Prickett and I, who's the choral conductor, we chose the Poulenc Gloria to go with it.
Well, and the Poulenc Gloria, as you mentioned, choral, you have a lot of different elements here.
Yes.
Does that heighten the level of, I don't want to say difficulty, but...
Well, yes. Anything with the larger the ensemble, the more things that could go wrong, I guess you could say. But also the more exciting it is because you have so much more to work with.
Are rehearsals different once you start adding the other elements?
Yes. And we haven't actually had any rehearsals yet with everybody put together for the Poulenc, but I think that'll start soon. It better start soon, yes.
The concert's Monday night, right?
Yes. I think usually in a piece like that, you put it together for a dress rehearsal and something like that.
This is going with the title of Winter Glory.
Yes. Well, it's The Gloria of Poulenc's.
Oh, okay.
And
yes.
Also, I think the Tchaikovsky Symphony is absolutely glorious. And it was premiered in winter on a cold day in late November, 1888, 123 years ago. And it's just a fantastic way of Tchaikovsky to kind of fight through his early winter blues and just dynamic music.
And I've read that when he first completed it, after he'd heard it a couple of times, he wasn't as happy with it as many of us are now.
Well, he was famous for that, changing opinions of himself. The premiere went very, very well, but a few months later it was performed in Prague, I think it was, and he was almost suicidal because it was such a dismal flop in Prague. The audience didn't understand it. The critics didn't understand it. It was too modern, they thought, which is incredible to me today because it's such a staple of the repertoire.
Well, and the second movement is familiar.
It became a pop song, Lovely Moon or something like that.
Yeah,
in the 30s or 40s, I think.
Yeah, Glenn Miller, I think, did it, yes.
Yes, and was on, you know, the radio as a pop song. But the tune is, of course, by Tchaikovsky. So if you come to the concert and you'll hear the melody, you'll definitely know it. I think in the 60s, I remember it was on a TV commercial, something about No More Rice Krispies.
Really?
So if you can think back that far, you'll recognize it from that as well.
What's it like when you're in the middle of this and you're conducting and you're hearing this beautiful music?
Well, it's very easy to get swept away by the music, and you have to have a bit of control to prevent that from happening, because otherwise disaster could happen. But you learn how to do that after conducting enough.
So you still can enjoy it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Every minute of every rehearsal is an enjoyment, just hearing the notes being put together. Even when we're first starting, it's very exciting.
You ever get goosebumps when you're conducting?
Yes, all the time. Even though I know what's coming and that it's still exciting.
We should mention this will be kind of the finale of a three-day University of Arkansas performance at Walton Arts Center.
Yes, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, I believe, and Monday night. It's a wonderful holiday experience for everybody. You should come out and see it.
And the Monday night concert begins at 7:30.
7:30, that's correct.
And you can't really beat the prices.
That's right. It's, I think, $5 general admission, $1 for students.
Guaranteed to get you into a December winter holiday mood.
Yes, it will.
All right. What do I say? Good luck? Is that what I should say to a...
Good luck is very appropriate.
Okay,
yes.
Well then good luck and look forward to the concert.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Robert Mueller is the director of the University of Arkansas Symphony Orchestra. The concert Monday night not only features Tchaikovsky, but also Poulenc's Gloria. As Ozarks at Largest Sophie Kidd notes, that piece has a rich history all its own.
Francis Poulenc was born in Paris in 1899, and he was a member of the French group Les Six. The Six is an epithet clearly derived from the earlier Russian Five. The aims of the French group were to break away from the influences of French Impressionism and Germanic formality as a reaction against the style of Wagner, and to employ a direct and simple style in their own music. Of the Six, Poulenc was by far the most successful. The brilliant French composer was born into a wealthy family of pharmaceutical manufacturers. His mother, an amateur pianist, taught him to play, and music formed a part of family life. From 1918 to 1921, he served in the French army, and then began taking lessons in composition. A decisive turn in his development as a composer occurred when he attracted the attention of Erik Satie. He was an excellent pianist, and in 1935 he became an accompanist to the French baritone Pierre Bernard, for whom he wrote numerous songs. Compared with his fellow composers from the group The Six, Poulenc appears a classicist. He never experimented with the popular devices of machine music or asymmetrical rhythms and polyharmonies. Futuristic projections had little interest for him. He was content to follow the gentle neoclassical formation of Ravel's piano music and songs. Among his other important artistic contacts was the famous impresario Diaghilev, who commissioned him to write music for his Ballet Rouge. He also, throughout his career, borrowed from his own compositions, as well as those of Mozart and Camille Saint-Saëns. He was a prolific composer. Apart from his fine songs and piano pieces, he revealed himself as an inspired composer of religious music. He also wrote remarkable music for the organ, including a concerto that is considered among the most beautiful concertos. A master of artificial simplicity, he pleases even sophisticated listeners by his blunt, triadic tonalities, spiced with quickly passing discords. Among his last series of major works is a series of works for wind instruments and piano. He was particularly fond of woodwinds and planned a set of sonatas for all of them. Yet he only lived to complete 4 sonatas for flute, oboe, clarinet, and the elegy for horn. Although Poulenc saw himself as primarily a composer of religious music, it was not in fact until 1936, following his return to Catholicism, that he produced his first sacred work. A steady stream of religious pieces flowed from his pen, including a mass and a series of motets. His first large-scale choral work, the Stabat Mater, appeared in 1950, and the Gloria in 1959, only 4 years before his death. Both employ the same forces, chorus, soprano solo, and large orchestra, and both enjoyed immediate acclaim. They have remained firm favorites with performers and audiences ever since. Poulenc's very distinctive style relies principally on strong musical contrasts. The harmony moves between Stravinskian dissonance and lush, sensuous chord progressions, vigorous counterpoint with lyrical melodic writing. Dynamics frequently range from a hushed piano to an emphatic forte within the space of a bar or two. He skillfully uses this colorful musical palette to express a wide range of emotions, from lyrical serenity to unashamed glee. The Gloria was commissioned by the Koussevitzky Foundation of America. Some critics suggested that it bordered on the sacrilegious. Poulenc replied, "While I was writing it, I had in mind angels sticking out their tongues, and also some solemn-looking Benedictine monks that I saw playing football one day." The work is divided into 6 short movements. After a brief introduction, the chorus enters with a prominent dotted figure to the word Gloria, which forms the basis of this movement. Gloria, the animated second movement, Laudamus Te, reveals Poulenc in playful mood, with the chorus for the most part divided into pairs of voices, sopranos and tenors, altos and basses, exchanging a series of short phrases. In the expressive third section, Domine Deus, the soprano soloist is heard for the first time with a typically yearning melody, while in the meantime the chorus is allocated a supporting role. That classical religious music is long, grim, and boring, don't worry. Poulenc charges constantly ahead through a dense but joyous kaleidoscopic journey. The fourth movement, lasting barely a minute, is woven from no fewer than a half dozen evanescent melodies. Like a well-structured pop song, it's over so fast you just want to hear it again. The soprano soloist returns for the exquisite Dominus Deus Agnus Dei, with soloist and chorus sometimes combining and sometimes exchanging lyrical phrases. The last minute of Gloria encapsulates both Poulenc's genius for seemingly effortless efficiency and the depth of his surface simplicity. Then a solo soprano glides through a loud amen, wondering desperately until, at the end of her breath, she settles on a final note of doubt, barely audible. The soprano suggests one more amen and a challenging, bittersweet suspension of eternal, unresolved mystery. On that shimmering ambiguity, the work ends. It's not only one of the most awesome moments in all of music, but brilliantly complex in all its levels of meaning. Poulenc's sense of humor and love of life shine through all his music, however solemn the text might be. One of his friends said of him, "There is in him something of the monk and the street urchin. Half monk, half thug." That's the phrase that describes him best. The Gloria brilliantly expresses these characteristics with its captivating mixture of solemnity and mischievous exuberance.
Sophie Kidd is a musician, composer, and writer, and she's a regular contributor to Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Mark Landon Smith. Mark often talks to us about different dramatic endeavors that he's pursuing, and for the holiday season, Santaland Diaries.
We've got Santaland Diaries coming up. Absolutely. Now, this has been written by David Sedaris, who wrote it as an essay. Now, David has been
first heard on NPR.
And David is a frequent guest here at the Walton Arts Center, and he was here last year. My good friend Leilani Law, popular artist about town, is real good friends with him. So we got to hang out a little bit, meaning I got to talk to him after a show. Yeah, David Sedaris, great humorist, writer, and this is an essay that he wrote that was turned into a one-man show, which my company, along with Julie Gable, Ceramic Cow Productions, is producing next week.
And the essays are based on his real-life experiences of being an elf in a department store, right?
Yes. He was had moved to New York and couldn't find a job, so he ended up being hired as an elf at Macy's Santaland. And he was like 33 when this happened. You know, he wasn't like some kid out of high school. So this was the only job he could find. So it's just his story of his experiences working as that elf.
And this is a one-man show, right?
It is a one-man show. It is. It is. It's me on stage for an hour just telling these stories about these experiences.
And I'm kind of excited because I've known you for a while now, and I don't know that I've ever seen you on stage.
No, I know. I know. I don't get, except for with Fun Bags.
Right,
you know,
Fun
which
Bags,
is different, but which is a lot different, our comedy improv group. But I have not been on stage as an actor in quite some time, so I'm looking forward. I'm calling this my comeback.
When you're a one-man show, my big fear would be that you've got, you know, if I'm on stage with someone and something happens, and much like you talk about when you hear about Fun Bags, how you rely on each other and you help each other, one-man show.
It's just me. Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, that is part of it, you know. It is just one person, so you don't have another actor to relate to. You don't have another actor to help you out in case you do get in trouble, so to speak. But you have you're relating the whole show to the audience, so you have a room full of people who are listening to you, as opposed to just like when you're on stage with another actor and you're just totally focused on them. I get to focus on all of these wonderful, wonderful people out there in the dark.
And you've been rehearsing your lines for a little bit, so.
Yes, it's August. It's 35 pages. So
right.
I remember
you telling me that you were starting to rehearse. And is it strange for you to sort of have to switch gears from being sort of the director and telling other people what to do to becoming the person on stage and still sort of telling yourself what to do? I mean, is there somebody helping you out with that?
Well, Julie Gable's directing the show.
Okay.
Yeah. And but it's really not, because it's just shifting gears, and I compartmentalize everything. So in this instance, I'm just the actor as opposed to – another instance is where I'm the producer or the director or the writer, you know, and I don't really let those lines cross at all. So I totally depend upon Julie, and it's collaborative. We talk about certain things, and, you know, I offer suggestions on how to do things, but she's been really, really excellent in directing me, and because I play a lot of different roles within the show itself. There's the role of the actor or the character telling the story, but he's also assuming all these different characters who are part of the story too. So,
should mention, I mean, it's very much a Christmas tinged show, but it's
yes.
also advisable that you be of a mature age.
We are saying 21 and up, and there is some language, and there is a bar there, so a cash bar, and we just want people to be aware because, you know, it could some people could get confused just by the name being
sure
Santa
you hear Santa
Land,
right
sure.
yeah and thinking it's just family entertainment. Depends on what family you're from, but you know, this is not for children at all. Or, you know, even high school kids. So, yeah, it's strictly for adults.
8th, 9th, and 10th?
8th, 9th, and 10th at the York Bowl on Dixon Street. The show starts at 7:30. The doors will open at 7, and tickets are $12 a person. It's general seating. As mentioned before, there is a cash bar. And for ticket reservations, you can call our box office at 200-5893. And you can also visit our website at ceramiccowproductions.org for complete information. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's a Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. Yes, next week. Yes. Yes.
Well, break a leg.
Thank you so much.
Ozarks at Large and KUAF, supported by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, supported by the City of Fayetteville, and dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook for photos and information.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Plainview.
Plainview.
Arkansas.
Yeah, well, yes.
Oh,
oh no, I'm, Plainview is kind of around Johnson County, maybe? I know there's the Plainview Rover School District.
It's in Logan County. It's just
my
north
apologies.
Of Subiaco.
Right. And now it's the Plainview Rover School District.
Oh, did not know.
Let's see. A bit of explanation needed, if you could help us out here, Antoinette. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, throughout parts of downtown Fayetteville and on campus, there was some craziness.
Yeah.
Because there were some free tickets being given away
yes.
to Girl Talk.
Yes.
And I could tell by some of the conversation on Facebook yesterday that not a lot of people – well, there were a lot of people who don't know who Girl Talk is.
Okay. Not a DJ.
Not a DJ.
No, I don't know how to explain it, but not a DJ. But it is Greg Gillis or Gillis. I never say his
Gillis,
last name right.
Gillis, I think, yeah.
And I never say it right. And he basically samples a ton of different songs and mashes them together, and he'll put out these albums that they're broken up into songs, but you could just listen to it as one continuous
seamless cut,
but they break it up on an album. The last album was free and you could download it online, and it just samples everything from current, like there was some Ludacris and some mm-hmm. rap and more top 40 things from right now, but then also things from like the 80s and beyond. And there's even some that I'm sure that I don't even know where it's coming from.
And you saw Girl Talk in Fort Smith this summer.
Yeah.
On the UAFS campus.
Yes, for the Festival on the Border. It was part
right.
of that whole thing with the night that they had The Fray and Annie Grammer. And mm-hmm. Girl Talk was the headliner. And I had never been to one of the concerts, but it was so much fun. It was basically like one giant dance party. And from what I understand, the show is never the same. He started off with one of the mashed up tracks from his last album.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of evolved from there. I mean, there was some Adele tossed in. It was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous good time. So what happened yesterday was he has teamed up with Axe Deodorant, that company.
Right.
And they're doing these one night only concerts at college campuses across the South right now. And so they had a limited amount of free tickets or whatever. And
this van was going all
this
over.
This van was going around to pass them out.
And they wouldn't tell people until like 5 minutes before on Twitter.
Right. And
so
I just,
you had this entourage following this van around town.
Yes. I happened to see it by accident and went to go get a ticket. Was not so lucky to get one. But however, I do have a friend who was gracious enough to get an extra one. So I will
be
there tonight.
So I hope that explains what the Girl Talk Mania was yesterday. This Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.